This is straight out of Crumpton with your host, Greg Crumpton.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Straight Out of Crumpton. I'm Greg Crumpton, your host and HVAC dude and podcast host. Wanted to welcome everyone in today. Got a really fun guest today. A guy I've worked around now for, close to 10 years, 8 years, something like that. We'll get the real number from him in a moment. But this gentleman recently took a new role within our company, and I'm excited to see his career continue to blossom, and wanted to have him on to talk a little bit about what makes him tick. So without further ado, today we have Tim Gillespie joining us. Tim, welcome to Straight Out of Crumpton.
Thank you, Greg, for having me on, man. It's kind of wild that I'm in this seat now in a podcast with Greg Crumpton. 10.5 years ago, I met you. My wife and I fiance at the time, were looking to move out of Long Island. She got a position down here as a manager of a physical therapy office for Atrium, which they were called something different before. Carolina Healthcare System. Yeah. So she got a manager position. She wanted to get out of the taxes and the cold of Long Island. So she got a job down here, put my information out there, and you guys gave me a call. And I flew down here for an interview. Walked in, I was already impressed because you guys had that fancy glass table in the conference room that I think Gunto built himself.
Yep.
By hand. With the valves and everything. I've never seen anything like that before. And to go along with the shoes that you wear, which is always impressive. I'm a shoe guy myself, so I notice those things. So that was really cool. And I was very impressed. And you guys gave me a ring that wanted me to come on a board. And I was actually walking around Long Island as a controls guy, working on Andover controls. I was downtown in New York and talking to, is it Shana?
Shonda.
Shonda, yes. Talking to Shonda about coming on board, and we agreed. And I haven't looked back since, honestly. It's a really cool company because we were in the data center world, never seen anything like that before. It was a really cool experience to just get thrown into HVAC, right? So I went the long route to HVAC. Went to college, didn't know what I was doing in college, but everybody else was going there, right? So got a degree somehow. I don't know how, with all the fun I was having in college and not going to classes. After college, didn't know what I was going to do because I had a degree that wasn't going to make me any money or a job to pay the bills. So talking to my brother, older brother, he just joined the Navy. And I was like, well, that sounds like a good idea. I got nothing else going on right now. Might as well take that opportunity. So I reached out to the recruiters and wanted to go Navy because my family history is Navy. They mentioned that there was a submarine job position. So it's, I don't know if you know or anybody else knows how that works. It's you're pretty much like applying for a job. They have all these jobs available, which I had no idea at the time. It was like that. In hindsight, I wanted to do Air Force, but I already signed the line with the Navy as a submarine force. But they had this really cool job at the Air Force where you could parachute in and be an air traffic controller and learn how to drive motorcycles. So I was like, damn, I would have picked that job. But it's probably good I didn't. I don't know if I would have done very well at parachuting with my fear of heights. So I was on the submarine, did one tour, was in there for one term, got out, got a controls job in New York. So I was dating my now wife at the time. Worked there for a year. We wanted to move and met you guys. So worked at Airtight and then Airtight Facilitech for 10.5 years, and now I just came on a board with Strategic. I always mess this up. Service Logic Strategic Services. It's a lot of S's. So, and it's been awesome since for 3 months now.
Well, I was going to ask you a bunch of questions, but you answered most of them in your opening monologue.
Gotcha. Sorry about that. It was a long time, right? It was a lot of information to get out there.
That was a lot of info, but it's good. So I can't believe it's been 10 and a half years, but I guess that's right. So that was just seems like time went by in such a hurry.
Yes, it moves quick. I have a 4.5-year-old daughter right now. So, and she grew an inch, I think, overnight. It's crazy how fast these little kids grow.
Yeah, it is. Well, all right. So let's just back up a little bit. A lot of people want to get out of Long Island, so I appreciate that. But how did you get to Long Island?
So, in the submarines.
And how old are you? Also, I want to know that.
You're not supposed to ask my age, right?
You're not a girl.
I'm 39 okay. years old. Yeah. So
that just helps me do my mental math better.
So you know how old you are. Is that what it is?
I'm 59. I'll be 60 in July.
All right. You're not that much older than me.
Shit. Keep dreaming. All right. So you're in Long Island and how'd you get there?
So there's a sub base in Groton, Connecticut. It's a fast attack submarine base. I don't know how much information I'm supposed to provide that, but
I think you're safe here.
Yeah, I think that information is out there on the internet.
Judging by what's going on in this day and age, I think that comment is very secure.
Google Maps. I'm sure you could look at things. I was in there. I have a good friend of mine from high school and college that lived in New York trying to be an actor after his college days with his degree. He chose another long route. So I would go meet him up once a month on the weekend. So there's a little thing called Fleet Week in
I've been there. City.
Yeah. So I partaked in the activities and met my now wife at one of the bars. I don't remember. I don't know why. And we started dating and got out of the Navy. My mom actually lived in Long Island because she's born and raised there. And she was living there at the time. So I made my way over there with all those connections, lived there. Me and my wife are still dating. I was just doing controls for a year and never done anything with HVAC or anything with controls. So it was really cool to get on top of these skyscrapers and really see New York City and what keeps these things running. But I didn't know anything about HVAC at that time. I just knew inputs and outputs. Some of the simple things you learn, like in the Navy, they'll put you through this like circuit board school. So you get to learn electronics and how that works. So that helped me with that job, I would say.
So where did you grow up?
Originally, I'm from Tampa, Florida. Born and raised there. Went through Catholic school all my life because my mom's like a big Catholic. I went along with it. Then did 2 years of high school in a Catholic all boys school. That was interesting. And then what was even more interesting, went 2 years into a public high school. So going from an all boy high school to a co-ed public school was quite the shock, quite the difference. The things you can get away with in a public school is amazing compared to a private Catholic school.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. My wife, I don't know if you know, she grew up in Sarasota.
Okay. Yeah. My aunt lives there actually.
Yeah. That's a
beautiful
cool
place.
Part of the country, man. I love it down here.
That's the key. You guys take some visits.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place.
Good stuff. All right. So you worked for, did you say Andover Controls?
Yeah, TMBA. That was their big product that they worked with. And I think when I came on board, I think Schneider had recently purchased Andover Controls.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So I started getting a little exposure to Schneider, but they were a big distributor of Andover Controls for that TMBA company.
So I'm always curious about, like, when you're growing up and I don't know your family history that well, who were some of your major influencers? Was your dad around? You said your older brother, so you had a brother.
Yes. So, yeah. My oldest brother was probably a big, part of my life, because he was like the male figure in the house, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Because my parents divorced when I was like, I think 1.5, 2 years old.
Gotcha.
And my dad was like he was in the Navy Reserves, so he was gone once a weekend, and they were living separately. So my oldest brother was in the house, and he was probably the only one that, I don't know, was the responsible one in the house too. But then I also had another older brother who helped coach me in basketball. So he had some guidance with me as well. And then I would say like my friend's dad, just a guy named Brian Horn, his parents kind of almost took me in too, which was, they were really cool people. And to really understand like what a marriage looks like, I guess you could say, right? So I would say those are the people that really contributed to me staying on solid ground, you could say, right?
It's always interesting. I came from a family that, you know, was traditional, mom and dad both at home. And then I have friends that, like you, didn't have a dad around, and friends that didn't have a mom around. But there's always people, not always. If you're lucky, there's people, yes, that can step into those roles.
Yeah, I was definitely blessed.
Be surrogate parent, if you will, for whatever you need. And a lot of times it's different people filling different roles, you know, like you said, two brothers, a friend, and the friend's parents. You know, that's where the saying it takes a village comes from, I think, is, you know, people stepping in and doing what they need to do when they see it. When they see a need, they step in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my best friend's mom told me that she was praying for, because they just moved from Jacksonville to Tampa, and she said she was praying for her son to meet a friend, and he loved to play basketball. I loved to play basketball, and I think it was fifth grade when they moved, so he was new to the area, didn't have any friends, and I guess it was challenging times for the family. But yeah, we hit it off because of basketball. And then I think I was at their house just about every other day and every weekend, you know. And they had like a really solid, solid structure family, right? So it was huge for me, I think, definitely.
Good. All right. So, you know, you mentioned a while ago, when you go into the Navy, they have these different jobs and you have to basically apply. I understand that all the crazy people wind up on submarines.
Well, they give you an extra added bonus to be on there. So if you're 18 or just not the brightest with finances, right, you take the little bonus, but it's not a whole lot. I think it's maybe like 70, 100 bucks, right? So,
well,
I feed on that desperation.
I say that in total humor, because there are a lot of really, really smart people that I know, especially in the data center world, came from submarine life. Because I think it, from what I understand, it requires a special discipline to live underwater with a group of, you know, 50, 100, 200 guys. Quietly.
Quietly, yes, and friendly and cooperatively, and everybody working together as a team.
Yeah.
It definitely takes, and you got to learn all the systems when you're a submarine to earn your warfare pen, to be submarine qualified.
What was the big takeaway for you, Tim, on living on a submarine? What, you know, you're 20 years old or whatever. What was the, when you laid there in that bunk, you know, with 1 inch of nose space between you and the rack above you, what was that thing that you thought, okay, this moment or this season of my life is probably going to stay with me?
There's a lot of things you can take out of there, that lifestyle. What's amazing is how your body and mind can adjust to the environment so quickly. When you go underway out to sea, you do a six on, six off, which is like either training or working on the
6 hours.
6 hours on your shift. So I was, my one shift, you could either be driving the boat for 6 hours or 6 hours where I was just taking logs of all the readings around the submarine just to make sure all the gauges are reading right. Everybody has their own different ship depending on what department they're in. There's a mechanical team, the A-gangers, they call them, and then they work on the air compressors, the air conditioning, essentially, which I didn't even think about that stuff at the time, which is crazy. They actually had sight glasses on there for moisture levels that they would have to take readings on every hour, right? It's crazy how fast your body will adjust to that different lifestyle that quick. I didn't see the sun or the moon for a whole month and didn't even realize it until that first moment we pulled into France. I forget the port. Open up the hatch. I'm like, where the hell are we? Like, how did we get here? You know what I mean? Because yeah. Literally, you're just living that life. 6 hours on your shift, 6 hours off doing maintenance or whatever, training. 6 hours in your rack, and God forbid they throw a training fire alarm session or something like that. Because if there is a fire on the sub, everybody is a part of that fire team. So you just no sleeping, even if it's a training session. So I think that was the most shocking thing, because you don't realize it until you're outside the submarine.
How many people were on your boat?
I'm not a good numbers guy, but I want to say it was like 100, 120, okay. I would say. And there's a back of the boat and a front of the boat. So the back is the nuclear guys. I would say they're the craziest ones of all. The amount of stuff they have to do and deal with. I wouldn't want that for anybody. Because they don't get to sleep, essentially. And they're essentially maintaining a nuclear power plant in the back of a submarine, right? It's kind of wild to think about.
When you're underway, do you have any idea where you are on the globe?
Luckily, I was part of the navigation electronics technician team or division, and so I did get access to that just because of my job. But it didn't really matter. I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't be like, hey, let's pull over to this Exxon or bar, right? Yeah. She's so along for the ride.
But most people don't know where they are.
No,
right?
Absolutely. On they have no idea. Nope. Mm-mm. Yeah, there's no windows. They keep you so busy, though. You don't have time to really even think about the mundane, I guess you could say, right? You're just occupied.
I'm such a spatial guy, and I'm so visual that even on an airplane, yeah. I'm always thinking about, like, where are we? Like, if I'm flying, you know, yeah. Look for landmarks, because I'm so inquisitive about exactly where my little fly self is on the map of humanity. And
there's so many cool things to see on the sub too, though. So that's the thing. Like, an airplane is like being in an airplane underwater. Just that same feeling. But I mean, there's giant missiles that you can look at, right? Like the torpedoes. Yeah. So I actually had to sleep under those the first few weeks I was there, which is interesting. And in the middle of my sleep, they were doing testing of the torpedo tubes. So they just fill it with water and blast it with, I don't know, 4,000 or 6,000 PSI of air, right? And it sounds literally like a train, like, going right over your head. And I woke up, I'm like, what the hell just happened to me? Like, that was probably my first night too, sleeping on that submarine underway.
That's cool stuff. I've got a friend, Tony Grayson, who Tony's been on the show with us. He is in the data center world. He's a submariner, and he's usually posting videos online on LinkedIn about sub life. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. So we're moving on. You wind up at Airtight in 2014 or so.
Yeah.
Somewhere
yeah.
around there.
Yeah.
And you said a while ago you didn't really have any experience in the HVAC world. We hired you, I remember, because of your attitude and your military service. I thought you had all the right stuff, and the team did, so you came on board. What was that like, going back 10 years ago? for you coming on board to a company that you didn't know nothing about in a strange town. You didn't have anybody here that knew a darn thing, and you didn't know anything about what you were supposed to do. How did that feel?
I think you do a really good job of presentation, like the way you had your company organized, right? I felt very confident coming into the company. It had a cool name, Airtight, right? The logo was cool. And then you had a service manager, Denny, very bright, very good guy to learn under. So that really helped a lot, having him, because he was so good at explaining things, just down to the smallest detail, right? I felt like it. I was definitely nervous for sure. Yeah.
But you did it anyway.
What's that? I did it anyways.
You did it anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I had to, right? I felt like I didn't have any other options because.
Now, you get a lot of. Sound very good.
No,
you're saying you came to work with us because you had no other option.
No, nothing better. Nothing better than that, right? No, there's nothing that was comparable, right?
Oh, you had no better option.
No better option. Oh, that's okay. a better phrasing, right?
I like the way that sounds.
Yeah, no better options by far, too, right? I'm not going to go bag groceries or work in a restaurant. I did that in college, and that was horrible, right? Nothing's worse than a restaurant gig, I feel like, compared to, I would much rather change a compressor out any day than be in a restaurant.
Me too.
But yeah, you get to be outside, right? You get to be outside, you know, get fresh air continually. I mean, you're learning so much so fast too, especially cause I came from not using tools very often. We lived in an apartment as a kid. I mean, I learned how to change my brakes in college just by YouTube videos and stuff like that, right? But I know there's a lot of guys in this field, they grew up doing this with their dad. So I felt like I had a lot to prove at that too, right? I was already so far behind everybody else. But luckily, Denny was a really good teacher. And yeah, I was nervous because it paid well. The benefits were amazing. I didn't have a job like that. Until the Navy does that, right? But they didn't pay nothing what being a technician did,
yeah,
right away, especially with no knowledge or certifications or licensing, really, for me. That's like at that time, I was really wild to experience, I guess, or to get that opportunity. I think that's the word, to get that opportunity with nothing showing, right?
But I think that for a lot of people, shows what a good attitude and the right mindset are how valuable that is, you know, because mm-hmm. I've always said, and I say it to this day, you hire for attitude, train for skill. You know, I mm-hmm. knew you were a smart guy and that you could do what we did, but you had the attitude to want to do it. That's the, that's the key, is having that drive. And obviously you did that. So, all right. So you come in 2014, now it's 2024.
Yeah.
And you're working for the parent company of my old company in a technical support role, which is, I think, a pretty good spot for you. Those 10 years in between, you had a kid?
Yep. Yeah.
You got
married, had a kid.
Progressed through the company, became one of the go-to guys at that company. So I ask you again, what are the takeaways from that 10-year journey over there? What stands out, you know, people, places, things, and experiences?
The crazy thing is the amount of guys that we had at Airtight, and I became the go-to guy, which I would never imagine, because we had some really skilled technicians there. Denny's always like a highlight in my mind. Chris Dennison, I don't know if you remember him. Really good guy.
How can you forget him?
Yeah, how can you, right?
I still see him. I talk to him occasionally.
Do you really? He's still the same, right?
He will never change. He'll be a 90-year-old curmudgeon, but he will always be a curmudgeon.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite people because Chris Dennison is the guy you never have to wonder where you stand with him. Because he will tell you exactly.
Yes. 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 Yeah. Yeah. What's it? It's a challenge to for me, because I was always, I guess I wanted to be accepted, right? I think that's just because of my upbringing, right? But yeah, Chris definitely would put it to you point blank, right?
If Chris didn't give you a string of dirty words and intermingle your name in them, he didn't love you. So
yes,
if you got that, you were in good standing with him. If he called you names you didn't know what meant, that meant he loved you.
But he was really good at relating to you too, right? Because he could relate to you. He would know exactly what shoes you were in on every job, I felt like, right? And he knew what it would take to get it done, and understand of, and have an understanding, right? He'd have that gentle, that harsh care, I guess you could say. I don't know how to put it, right?
Tough love.
Yeah, exactly. And then who else? Nate Morris. He's still with Airtype Siltech.
Yeah.
He's another guy, but he's completely, I would say, the complete opposite of Chris, right? But the amount of knowledge he had, and you just knew that this guy knew what he was doing, right? You just had, even though he wouldn't tell you many words, right? But
as long as you didn't take lunch.
Yeah, that too, right? That too. But he would tell you essentially the whole operations manual from his head, I feel like, you know.
Yeah.
We had so many other technicians too that were just really good, like great attitude guys, cared about the skill level and the quality of work, and just held you to that standard too.
I think that's one thing that our company was known for around the city, was doing high quality work, not only functionally, but it looked well. We communicated to the customer well. Yeah. You know, all of those things that we began the company with, you know, I think carried through, you know, like,
yeah,
when you came on board, the guys knew, and ladies knew what our DNA was, and everybody held each other to a standard. And I think that's why we did well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it was ever like specified too. It's just like the culture, right? It was just like an organic thing. I felt like it's just how everybody there, and maybe it's just a certain type of people that you hired. I don't know.
Well, right? I hope that's what it was, because that's what we tried to do. And, you know, hiring people, you sometimes blunder because you're not always presented the person who's going to work there. You're presented the person who's interviewing. And sometimes that's not the same person. Like, after you hire somebody, their evil twin shows up.
That's terrible, yeah.
Yeah, it happens though, but you don't know that. So you learn as you go. But I think you know, what Denny and I had when we worked at McKinney's way back when, before Airtype existed, you know, we just believed that there was a certain way to do things. If you're going to do it right, make it look right, make it functional, make it last forever. You know, that was the goal.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and I remember, like, putting masking tape on ductwork to run the duct sealer on it and then pull it off so you had a straight line, rather than the gobbledygook of
just slap it on.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm talking about stuff that's going to be visible, you know. And go in restaurants now, you know, the big current thing is having exposed ductwork. And I look up at this ductwork, I'm like, damn, I wouldn't expose that, you know. That's not show quality.
Yeah.
But it's the little things, like, you know, taping off the duct before you mastic, or, you know, spacing your tie wraps properly so you don't have four in a row and then 2 foot gap between the next tie wrap, and just little, the details as well.
Yeah. Ricky Kepley was another guy. He told me about just protecting the filter dryer, the keeping as gray as possible, not having your burn marks all over it, especially if somebody's gonna be able to see it, right?
Yeah.
But most people don't care about that. They'll just throw torches all over that thing and burn it up, right?
So I think part of our industry, Tim, and what I love about our industry, is very bifurcated to me. People who understand our business well from the mechanical aspect, and they want to do a totally professional job and look good and, you know, keep their truck clean and learn how to communicate and do their paperwork well, all the things you would want as an owner. There's that group. And then there's a group of people who just show up and get it running. And, you know, you kind of have to decide, and this is not just in air conditioning, that's pretty much anything in life.
Yeah.
Which way do you want to go? You know, and it's harder to do the detailed life. You know, it is, because you have to be more willing to do that last incremental percentage of anything, whether you're picking up trash in your neighborhood or, you know, changing diapers on a kid or whatever you're doing. It's harder to do it 100% or as close to good as you can get it versus just showing up and, you know, doing the minimal. But that's the personal choice, you know?
Yeah, it's what I guess helps you sleep at night, right? I guess.
Well, it does for people who want it. The people who, and you know, there's nothing, I guess, it's their choice.
Uh-huh.
But for me, I can't go to sleep if I know that I've left something less than giving it my best. And that's just a personal mental struggle. And it's probably a defect, because it can drive you crazy, you know. And I remember years ago, I wrote an article called When Did Good Enough Become Good Enough?
Mm-hmm.
And good enough for a lot of people is good enough. You know, you're blowing cold air out of a duct in the ceiling. Okay, mission accomplished. I'm not good with that.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people that, you know, we were able to work with were good with that. We wanted it to be right, understand the temperature, not beer can cold, you know, but what was the temperature? 39.3. That's different than, you know,
there's so much that goes into the science and engineering of these machines, right? And the efficiency and the energy. I mean, it is hard, right, to do the 99% of things that you're asked to do in life. But I think at the same time, doing that, it's contagious. I think I was listening to a podcast. They were talking about how, like, it's like a contagious thing. Like, you doing that will inspire someone else to achieve more, right? But the more you don't shoot for that, it almost like a cancer, I guess you could say, right? You just, like, you're not helping people around you, right? You're only looking out for yourself, right? And then, but if you have that awareness that I'm going to give it my all, you know, or the most I can give today, right? It's going to help. It's not going to be immediate, right? It's not going to be overnight, but people will notice, right?
And I think they will. You know, that's, and again, this is a personal thing, and it's just how you choose to live. And, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I believe that you have that, and that's why I'm excited for your new role. So tell us a little bit about it. What are you doing? What do you hope to do? You know, kind of what does that look like? What's your, I guess this is the next step in chronologically for you.
Yeah. So currently, I work for the National Accounts Service Logic team. They facilitate contracts throughout the US and in Canada, and use our subsidiaries, the other service logic companies, to facilitate those contracts with service or maintenance, repairs, installation, stuff of that. So my job is to help the people here in the office who've never been in the field, who've never worked on an HVAC unit, understand the service reports and the things that come across their desk from a technical standpoint, because I've been in the field and I've seen, I can't say everything, but I've seen a lot of it, most stuff that comes in here. But so I just help them understand and try to navigate the customer and service managers or the vendors relationship and how to provide the best service we can to our customers, essentially from that. I hope to achieve, I don't know, there's a lot I can do with this role, right? I'm going from such a micro vision, right? Just working on one unit to like a national stance. So there's so much I get to see. There's so many technicians out there that are in this company. I wanna help them, give them that vision and that opportunity, right, to grow their careers and help any way I can for that. I feel like there's a lot of possibilities, really.
Well, there's no doubt there is. And this role is so critical, you know, I think, for the success of our customers, because that's who you're impacting.
Yep.
Second tier, because you're impacting who's delivering service to them.
Yep.
So you've been there 90 days or so. What's the number one takeaway for you so far? What do you see the biggest area that you want to dive into? What? And I'm not saying what's the most broke, because every job has broken pieces that you can fix. But when you're driving home, you're like, man, this right here is something that I know I can make a dent in, and it'll help everybody. What? How do you?
Something I've already dove into already is HVAC training for the people here. I do like a once a month PowerPoint lesson. I'm learning that, right? I've done some PowerPoints back in college, but going from an educational standpoint and how to deliver that appropriately and figuring out the audience that you're talking to, right? Because coming from a service company where everybody's worked on the stuff, right, to a company that the people here, they're very smart, very intelligent people, but they just never worked on HVAC stuff or had the engineering mindset, the mechanical mindset. So I think that's one thing I've dove into. I got to work outside all day. We did like a hands-on training, which is really cool. I got to light my torches up and fix some holes that I created myself. That was fun. Keep my skills up. So that's something I've definitely tried to dive into completely.
You know, I think that that's such an important piece for any company, really, and ours, you know, for sure. But having somebody that can be that liaison, or whatever you want to call it, from the core competency of the company, whatever it is, you know, putting brakes on a car or repairing air conditioning, somebody that can do the work, the hands-on part, and then be able to articulate what you're doing and why you're doing it to somebody who is moving through the business process of invoicing and collecting purchase orders and all the stuff that goes with the business side of HVAC. I think that's really, really important, because, you know, when I talk to the ladies that are part of that big team that you support, you know, to your point, maybe they came out of a hygienist position. Maybe they worked as a salesperson over here, or maybe they were a nurse in training. Nobody ever told them what a reversing valve was on a heat pump.
Yeah.
Obviously, they didn't need to know, but now they need to know, because they're reading about it. They're
sending quotes out and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they just need to know. And you're in a position now to, I think, really strengthen the core of the business just by giving them that extra weapon of your 10 years of field life and being able to, and you're good at communication, being able to communicate why. And,
yes.
And I think that's so important. And then on the other hand, from a defensive position, when we get pushback from a customer, you're able to explain it to the customer as well. So I'm excited for you having that position. So, all right. So you're almost 40. You got a 4-year-old.
Yep.
You got a cush job. I'm just kidding. It's not. it's a tough job. I know.
The chair is comfortable.
What would you like to do next? You know, and I know that only 90 days in is tough to say, but I think you got to have some kind of vision of what you would ultimately like to do, either in the business or not, you know, it's your call of what you want to talk about. But what do you see 55-year-old Timothy doing?
Oh, it's only 6 years, or no, 15 years from now, right? Yeah.
I'm glad you recalibrated that number. I just said you were a smart guy.
Yeah, I know, right? Math wasn't, it's a lacking specialty of mine, I guess you could say. 15 years from now, it's tough. But I know, I guess when I started with Airtight, I was like, man, I want to do what Greg does, right? I'm sure you hear that all the time, right? I wanted to run a business. I think I've always wanted to. I never understood what it takes, right? My wife started her business 6 years ago. So she started a business, physical therapy business. And man, it's not easy to run a business, you know, especially when you started yourself, right? But now I think that's changed, right? I see this national level. I wouldn't mind running this kind of company or moving into the corporate life. But I don't even know what you guys do, right? So you got to shoot for the moon and land in the stars, right? So,
well, I think you got to have something that motivates you, you know, whether that's you want to sail the Amazon in a canoe or you want to run strategic services. I think having those kind of goals helps you get through and keeps you getting better. And, you know, the last thing you want to do, and this happens in our industry, 40-year-old techs can become stagnant. And they've been doing this for 10 years or so. They get pretty darn good at it. And then it gets to be kind of run of the mill. They get complacent. They don't stay current on technology, or they could get hurt because they're complacent. And that's why I think it's good to have these ideas in your head about, even if you don't know cemented what that looks like, just having that mental playground and thinking about it, because you just got to stay in the game, you know?
Yep. I mean, cause I didn't know what it'd take to run the company, but I saw something that was lacking was getting a license for the company, right? So I went after it, right? And I got my H3, got my H2. Where can I get my H2 right now? But yeah, you got to be constantly working. But it's also just what I've changed is not looking for myself, right? Trying to fill the need of others. I think that's what, maybe that's maturity, but that's what I'm trying to do really now with my life, is just trying to help others. And maybe that'll help me get to where I want to be, but I'm not focused on that too much anymore. Cause I get more reward out of helping people get what they want, right? Or what they need. You know, I think that's what I learned also as being a technician, that you give someone cold air, right? Or heat, and they're so relieved. I mean, you did it as a job, right? Cause you're paid to do it, but that was a reward.
And yeah. It's deeper than the paycheck out there.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Cause they thank you. They'll give you something on the way out too, like food or something. I don't know, you know, that I didn't really care about that though. It was just the fact that they were happy that you were there, and you were a friendly face too, right? To talk to.
Well, I think it's that human connection that people have. They, you know, that's why we give the sanitation crew and the mailman, you know, a nice gift card at Christmas time, because you appreciate what they're doing.
Yeah. And,
you know, it's their job. Yeah. They're supposed to pick up trash, or they're supposed to deliver the mail, but when you sit, like I sit up here in my office and I'm like the mayor of this end of the street, you know, I get to see everything that happens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get to see those interactions with people. And maybe it's the guy that picks up the leaves and all that crap from the city, and how he talks to the lady with the kid across the street. And it's just that human piece that people want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
outside of the job, that's going to get done. But be a decent human while you're doing it really goes a long way.
Yeah. I mean, if you could bring that into the job, right? That's, I think a lot of the guys I worked with and I appreciated working with had that mindset, right? They wanted to help you for you, not for themselves, right? I mean, that's the extra benefit, I guess, because it'll thus help the company. But I think you always were like that. You wanted to help the guy for the guy, right? You weren't looking out for yourself. I mean, it of course it benefited you, right? Because the better technician you have, the happier the technician, the better work you'll get.
It's deeper than that. I mean, here we are sitting here talking about you doing this cool role 10 and a half years later, you know. Yeah. That to me is rewarding.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, the opportunity is amazing.
The guys and, you know, the girls I get to still hang out with from our early days of the company, you know, that are still friends. I cherish that.
Gotcha.
Well, Tim, in respect of time, I know you've got probably a stack of stuff to do. I've seen people walk by trying to get your attention. So I just want to say thank you for taking time today to join us. It's been certainly refreshing to hear your point of view. Cool. I'm so happy you're doing what you're doing and growing into your role. And making you know your life better, but in the process helping other people. So
yeah, that's my goal for sure.
Congratulations. I wish you nothing but the best. And maybe after a year and 3 months you can come back and talk to us and tell us how it's looking.
Sure. Yeah, definitely, Greg. Thank you for having me. And it's always good to talk to you, man.
Well, I guess that is another edition of Straight Outta Crumpton in the books. What a great conversation with a great guy. I just really enjoy talking with Tim. He's from the first day I met him, he's never been a run-of-the-mill dude, and he is still not a run-of-the-mill dude, which is a credit to him. So if you want to check out more episodes of Straight Outta Crumpton, you can go to Apple or Spotify or anywhere you get your podcast. You can go to gregcrumpton.com and also all the episodes, I think there's 125 or 30 posted, so you can pick and choose from some really cool people we've had. And Tim's another one to add to the wall of fame. So without further ado, thank you all. Look forward to seeing you on the radio soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.